Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cabin Mention Radio program. Today is June 30th, 2018. Man, half the year's gone by, Trey. Where does
it
go, man?
It's crazy, man.
You know, if you're not here in the studio watching what's happening, it's like to the last second, to the last beat of the music, things are getting set up and squared away here. So I'm finally sitting down in my chair, and I've got my fresh Joe from CEFCO here at Hilltop and Cameron. So if you need a cup of coffee, you go to Hilltop, CEFCO here in Cameron, get your fresh Joe, premium coffee or whatever. Premium coffee, it always sounds like you're getting high test gasoline, you know? And and they also got Monsters, 3 for $5, all sorts of things. So you can get your papers, your smoke, your Monsters, your coffee, all sorts of good things there at the CEFCO. Tell the girls you said, and I said hi, you heard us on the radio, and get yourself squared away. Now, we're also simulcasting here on this station, KMIL 105.1 FM and KRXT out of Rockdale, 98.5 FM. I hope whoever it was who just called me is turning the dial and taking a listen to the show. If you want to get a hold of us here at the studio, it's 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or just go directly to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and tell everybody you know. We've got a lot going on this show, and what I like to do is cram in a whole bunch of stuff before the first break, which is about 10:15. So I want to start off with show highlights. Once again, true stories of self-defense from this month's issue of the American Rifleman. So if you got it, open it up and read along with me. You're going to learn what to do and what not to do from the experiences of others. So we're going to follow after each story with one of my excellent commentaries, so stay tuned for that. This week's License to Carry Attorney segment will cover how to display yourself in a good light while being recorded during a self-defense situation. Basically, body mannerisms, comments, and actions. So here you are, you're in a situation, and you're kind of familiar, there's going to be cameras somewhere around, cell phones, whatever. You might want to program into your subconscious things to do, say, whatever, so you look better in the courtroom. Today's Tactical Snacking segment with the delicious Janae Goodman will cover salsas and dips. Don't forget the chips there, Janae. I love salsa and dips, and I think she may be doing that next week. We'll see. Maybe in the future she will tell us about how to make them, shape them, whatever you got to do. But anyway, if you're listening, Janae, that's what it's going to be. During the Topic of Interest segment, I will be giving you dates of upcoming events with Aaron's that you can participate in, so get your calendars open and ready. At 11 o'clock, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the Duke of Decency, the connoisseur of common sense, the pontificator of practicality and all-around good guy, Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. This week's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the Taurus Model 905 snub-nose revolver in 9mm. Check out my short video at aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. You'll see me holding it there. It's a neat little snub-nose revolver, and it's a 9mm, too. Then call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417 to buy yours. This revolver definitely fills a niche. Now, my special guest today is Vicky Goza. Y'all know Vicky. Now, Trey, you know Vicky, right?
Oh, yeah. I love Vicky. She's awesome.
Tell us, I mean, you did some acting with Maurice and...
And Maurice being her husband. But more than that, Vicky is just...
that long pause.
You know, I don't want to call her... She's like that aunt that you love, because then she's going to smack me when she gets in here saying that she's old. But she is. She's like that that older sister that picks on you, but she doesn't do it to be mean. She picks on you because she loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's always there with a smile and something funny to say, or... Her shoulder if you need it. She's just a really fantastic lady.
Wow, that's awesome. She'll be here right around 11:30 for an interview in the second hour, so we'll look forward to seeing that and hearing that. The let's see, where did I go here? I lost my space. Okay, then finally, oh, how could I forget this, Trey? Finally, we got Master Cindy Key coming in. She's going to show us more self-defense moves as I am practicing.
I know how you forgot that. You were hoping nobody would remember so you could get through a week without getting bruised up.
If you don't know it, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a new listener to the show, every Saturday around 11:55, Master Cindy Key, the owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, comes in and uses me as practice target for your benefit. We put it on video so you get to see what she does, and hopefully you'll decide to sign up and take a class from her. Now, With that, let us go into our armed citizen segment, the true stories in self-defense, because we all love those, don't we? And this one here, once again, is from the July 2018 issue of the American Rifleman, the Armed Citizens column. And story number one reads as follows. And if you're following along, it's on page 10. Dogs are supposed to bark, but a North Carolina pet owner knew it was unusual for his dog to do that. So when he was awakened one morning by the noise, he decided to check on his dog. Arriving downstairs, he noticed a stranger in his outdoor sunroom. The resident grabbed his small-bore bolt-action rifle and went outside. As he approached, he noticed that the other man was fussing with the doorknob trying to enter the home. When I saw that, I instantly put up my rifle at him, the pet owner told local reporters. With that, he ordered the would-be intruder to back away from the house and lie on the ground, with the armed citizen held the man at gunpoint until authorities arrived. The suspect faces multiple charges, including one count of breaking and entering. Now, ladies and gentlemen, my commentary. If you're a constant listener to this program, you might be able to figure out what I'm about to say. Now, although I'm happy that this turned out well for the homeowner, I still raise my eyebrow in question as to why, one, if the homeowner knew it was unusual for his dog to bark at that time in the morning, then why didn't he go get his gun first? And two, since he didn't get his gun first, he went to investigate, then decided he needed a gun and went back for it. Get your gun first. If you hear something, a bump in the night, don't go, well, let me go see what it is. Oh, there's somebody trying to kill me. Wait, let me go get my gun and then come back. It don't work that way.
Would you say that's your number one rule?
It's got to be. It's turning into, well, no, the number one rule is like the shirt says, I'm always right. And then rule number two on the back. What's it say, Trey?
Did your wife let you out of the house with that? Did she pick it out for you?
Oh, stop. Story number two. Women have buying an increasing number of firearms in recent years. And that trend is starting to make itself felt against those who try to commit criminal acts. In Arizona, for example, a shopper was getting ready to enter her car and drive home. While she was attempting to close the door of her vehicle, a man armed with a hatchet approached the vehicle, demanded that she hand over her keys and get out of the car. The woman drew a sidearm and told the man to back off. Instead, the assailant raised the hatchet. The shopper proceeded to shoot him, holding him at gunpoint until the police medics arrived. The suspect was hospitalized and charges were to be filed later. My commentary. The man is in the house. Okay. Story number two here, commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, it's true. More women are buying handguns to defend themselves. A sad statistic, though, is that a large portion of those women do not train with the weapon. This woman, however, was bold and prepared whether she was trained or not. So if you're going to get your gun, you got to do some training. Call me up. We'll square you away. Story number three. In another example of how gun empowers women, a South Carolina woman used a 9mm handgun to protect her boyfriend from a deadly threat by an attacker armed with a shotgun and a garrote. I bet you that 9mm was a Taurus Model 905 that we're going to be talking about today. The thug was one of two people who forced their way into the home. The incident started when loud knocking caused the male homeowner to crack the door open to peek outside. Listen up, everybody. Listen up, guys. The door was pushed in, shoving the resident against the wall hard enough that the drywall cracked, according to the video news report. The intruders threatened the people inside the home, and during the ensuing struggle, the homeowner's girlfriend fired two shots, killing one bad guy and causing the other to flee. Here's my commentary. I bet you know where I'm going. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, but I gotta say it. This is a growing theme. The woman takes care of the man. This guy acted like a typical woman in a horror movie. The homeowner hears a loud knock, is nervous, opens the door slightly, and gets body slammed against the wall. I swear the world is spinning off its axis or something. It's just not the way it used to be.
You know, half of that trend I really, really like. The fact that the woman is right there.
I get that. But man, come on, man.
The man needs to be right there too. It's not a thing of be a man. It's a thing of protect your mate, protect your family.
Man up.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Trey, I got an opinion piece here, and it's hard.
You don't have an opinion. Yeah, not you.
This one's hard. Something got me fired up this week. So listen up. Ladies and gentlemen, this opinion piece, I've titled it Gossipers. Ladies and gentlemen, this opinion piece is directed right at those people who are indeed gossipers, and you know who you are. If you're playing possum, then let me call you out by giving you definition and synonyms of the word. Surely after that, you will recognize yourself as the true blowhard that you are. People like you have no place in my inner circle, family, friends, business associates, or any other place for that matter. You're nothing but trouble and make a social mess wherever you attend or whomever you associate with. Here's your definition, and I hope you cringe after hearing it. Gossiper is a noun. Definition: person who gossips. Synonyms: busybody, big mouth, blowhard, braggart, know-it-all, windbag, chatterbox, squealer, blabber, gasbag, meddler, snoop, parrot, rumor monger, informer, scandal monger, busybody, whisperer, scandalizer. Since I'm on public radio, I'll keep to myself the words I feel really describe people like you. You make claims and accusations based on passing comment or read something without reading it all to see its clarification and then spread false rumors like wildfire. Your misguided and false claim to the masses cause misrepresentations, confusion, and lots of times pain and suffering to those you're blabbering about. Rumors will always be, but you don't need to start them. If you hear one, hold your judgment until you research the facts. You obviously lead a boring and lonely life and need the excitement of rumors to keep your pathetic selves entertained. You're like children. You act like children. So let me help you out. The next time you decide to open your trap, instead of spreading a rumor, why don't you just stick a sock in it? And with that, Trey, let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll have the awesome, incredible, extraordinaire attorney, Benton Ross Watson. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lowell Funeral Home talks about the celebration of life.
Let's remember that loved one, their life, about the way they lived and what they embraced. Funerals are really about life. Our attitude is we need to remember this person by celebrating the life that they lived.
Call Mark Burns Lowell Funeral Home anytime, serving Central Texas families since 1908. 254-697-3661.
It's a trust as true as Texas, a friend with a helping hand. When you want to ensure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Is your insurance company taking too big a bite out of your apple? When you're shopping for property insurance, think about coverage, service, and price. Make sure you're getting the most for your money. When you compare apples to apples, you'll see that Germania Insurance delivers outstanding value. Competitive rates, flexible payment options, and discounts. Plus, Germania offers 24/7 customer claim service. Trusted by Texans since 1896. Don't give up service or sacrifice coverage. Compare apples to apples, then choose the outstanding value offered by Germania Insurance.
So when you want to ensure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Call 697-4683 for Sharon Ruback, representative of Ruback Insurance and Germania Farm Mutual Companies.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
That's right, everybody. We are back. Today is June 30th, 2018. And Ross, you're back. You've taken a hiatus for 2 weeks, and we had the super attorney Rick Dodd here doing a tremendous job. Not that you didn't. I'm just saying. You
know, he's the king, man.
We need somebody fantastic to fill somebody who's extraordinaire, because it'd be a major vacuum if we didn't have, you know, excellence sitting in that seat.
Well, you're his holy eminence. I don't know. Like, you're the king. I mean, you guys...
Getting real deep, man. I'm gonna.
You got to hear us off air.
Yeah. Now, look, Ross. When every time we talk, or Rick's on here, and we're in the course of a LTC attorney segment, things are said that I go, "Whoa, that's a good thing to talk about." And sometimes we do repeat some things, but it's okay because we've always got new listeners, and those who have listened before may have forgotten. And it's always good to refresh. And this particular topic, and we're gonna go all over the map, I'm sure. But I kind of wanted to go
over.
What do you do in a self-defense situation while you're being surveilled? And when I don't mean like somebody spying on you, but in actuality they are with the cameras. But you got cell phones, you got eyewitnesses, you got store monitors, all these different methods of getting yourself recorded that can come and bite you in the rear end in a court case if you got to do for self-defense. So with that opening there, go ahead and tell us what you think.
Well, I'll say this, you know, a lot of people like to have their own home security systems and surveillance cameras. I'm in the process right now of trying to update mine and get mine, and you should know that having your own security system could actually hurt you in maybe some kind of situation where you're going to use at least deadly force, because you're going to be filming yourself.
That's why all my cameras face out. I got a red dot. I stand there, nothing's on.
And so it's going to make it harder to stage the scene.
There's your cue marks, man. You know about that, Trey, where you stand, you put the tape on the floor, the Lord.
I plead the fifth. I mean, I've actually had two cases where my clients had home security systems and the police used a warrant to seize the footage. And once they found out the footage was there, and in one case it hurt my client, in another case it helped. And so just know that it can hurt you. okay, and it can go to make the state's case better. But this is why we talk about, this is why when we, especially when we, at least when we talk about deadly force, okay? I mean, when you're, if you're in a place where you've got a right to be, and somebody comes up messing with you, and you're, you know, they're going to use some kind of force against you, we already know we've got a right to use force against them. And so in those kind of scenarios, I think the areas are not as gray. But when we talk about deadly force, it's a lot more serious. The risks are a lot more serious. The consequences are a lot more serious. Remember, we talk about any kind of action or, you know, mechanism that can cause death or serious bodily injury, okay, is going to be considered the use of deadly force. So anytime you're going to use a firearm for LTC purposes, like I said, if you're going to use the firearm, period, you talk about to wound somebody, whatever, I'm telling you, if you're going to use the firearm at all, period, that's going to be serious bodily injury, at least, okay, because they're made for that purpose, okay? And so you're going to be in a situation where you're using deadly force. Now, we talked about just, you know, pulling out your weapon and saying, hey, you know, don't make another move. Put your hands up, right? Lay down flat on the ground, right? Or I will blow your head off. Okay? That right there is a threat to use deadly force if necessary. Okay? And remember that it is not deadly force to simply threaten the use of deadly force. Right. If you know, you're saying I will use deadly force if necessary. OK. And so just pulling the weapon out is not itself deadly force if it's the threat to use deadly force in that situation. We spoke about that.
Let me ask a question here, because I come from a family of attorneys. I've got this legal spin in mind. And what you just said there, where you got threat is justifiable force. That's Penal Code 905, I think it is.
It's in the nine.
OK.
Chapter nine.
And but when you, because what I'm always teaching is don't say, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to stop you because you're scaring me. Because stop says it could mean anything. The verbal command got you to stop. The threat is over. But if you're doing a threat is justifiable force, but then you say, I'm going to blow your head off, wouldn't that look really bad in a courtroom? Because now you're saying, I'm going to do a specific thing other than just trying to stop the threat.
I got you. I'm just a realist.
No, but I'm a realist too, because I know some super attorney like you who wants to win for their client is going to spin it big time.
Yeah, but I'm just assuming no case is ever going to be just perfect facts, okay? Maybe I got off on a little bit of a tangent. I was trying to say this is why every time that we speak about this, that I always talk about the training, because the training and preparation and readiness, and you're at least have walked through what you're going to do in this situation a couple times goes into how you're going to handle the scenario, okay, in real life, right? And it goes into help you better prepare about what to say and do. That way you're not trying to second guess in the heat of the moment what you're supposed to do. You've already walked through your head what's going to happen, right? If they come in this window, What is my plan of action? If they come in this window, what's my plan of action?
Like,
if they come through the first door, even if they don't go to you for training, which they should, because I told you, spoke to me about 5 minutes just in one day. We've had more training since, but 5 minutes and you just shed so much light on, right, what I should do in certain scenarios. And I routinely tell people about that. And
well, thank you. But
I'm saying that's important, because just those couple of tips in and of themselves will help give me another second, maybe.
That's right. It helps.
And
you.
A second is, oh, it's like a lifetime.
A lifetime.
In a moment of a life or death type of situation where adrenaline is pumping.
But it's okay. Not always going to work just like you planned it. When you practice and when you go into real life, hopefully it works. Just like you said a second ago, nothing's perfect. We're being realistic. We try to train the best we can. But when that situation happens, it's not going to go A, B, C, D, all the way to Z. It's going to go A, G, H, K. You know, it's going to go backwards. So you got to be prepared. But the more you train, the quicker you can adapt.
And at least if you have some plan of action, right, it's going to help you be more under control and more confident to handle those set of circumstances, set of facts, the events that occur that might be unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because some of that is going to be expected. You're going to know where your weapon is, how you're going to secure your weapon, how you're going to use your weapon, know the words you're going to say, right? If a certain set of similar or same events as you've played it out, right, in whatever process you've developed to protect your home and family from an invasion or theft or whatever that might be, once those things happen that aren't expected, you can better handle those situations, and you're not going to be faced with, you know, the justice system, yeah, because you made some stupid mistake because you weren't ready.
There's some key doctrine that you got to brainwash yourself with, and mannerisms you got to brainwash yourself with, so that it comes second nature.
But no, I think, in my personal opinion, is you've got an intimidation factor, right? That you need to. Some of this is going to be mental, I think, when somebody breaks into your home. Right, and that's why I talked about my friend, who's a police officer. Goes out, she's a sheriff's deputy. Goes out to all these places, all alone by herself. And I always ask her, was she scared? And she goes, no, I know how to talk to people. Okay, and she's just a little bitty, really short, just cute Mexican girl. Just the cutest thing you ever see. And you can't believe that this girl can just control an out of control situation. And you're just amazed at how some people do it. But she has conquered the mental and psychological aspect of the game, okay? And so it's the same, I think, in a home defense situation. Some of this is going to be mental and psychological. So do I think telling somebody I'm going to blow your head off, right? I think a jury's going to understand. Somebody comes in my home at night and is rummaging around in my home, my castle, my property that I've worked so hard, right, to acquire with all of my assets. Yes, if you get out of line and I don't know who you are and you're here without my permission, I am going to blow your head off because I am scared right now. I have no idea who you are. I don't know what you're doing, right? You're here at a time of night when, I mean, it's obvious that you're trying to commit some kind of unlawful offense with force. And I'm going to answer your unlawful force with my own force.
You know, it's interesting. There's different methods of attack. When I was going through some special training there back in the day, we would do tactics of speed and action of violence and all this kind of stuff, but we do it quietly, and then we'd also do it screaming at the top of our lungs. And it has different reactions.
I was going to ask you, so what if you...
If you're screaming at the top of your lungs, it can have a tendency to paralyze people. What's going on? When you do the silent approach, people start freaking out. Where's this stuff coming from? What happened? What just happened? Because you're silent in the shadow type of person. That's what I like to do.
What if it's in the middle? Like, what if they're in there and you cut the light on and you say, don't move a muscle?
That's a different story. You got them. But you see, I'm a firm believer that I'm proficient enough that I'm not going to cap them because I'm going to say, you move, brother, and I got you. I don't need to shoot you because I've got the situation under control now. I know what I'm doing and I know what I can do. I'm going to call law enforcement. If you budge, if you do one thing, you're wrong. It's over. Okay. Now, sometimes I like the concept of turning the lights on because it evens the playing field. Sometimes you got these guys coming in with night vision. You turn on the lights, then we got an even playing field. If you're in the dark and they got night vision on, then you're in the backside of it. So it all depends. It all depends on how quick it's happening. If you're searching house room to room, once again, it all depends where you're at, what kind of indicators you have as to where they are in the house, how well trained you are. And that's all the kind of things we teach in the class. But there's so many different ways to approach a situation that it behooves you to learn those different ways. And like I was saying before when I brought up this subject, there's screaming attack, I'm going to blow your freaking head off, or where the heck is that guy, man? Where's he at? I know he's around here somewhere. It's kind of like Spider-Man. He just comes out of nowhere.
And so that's kind of what you were asking me the questions, what, you know, it's about the topic today, and I kind of left it to you. I mean, this is some of your area as well. This is not solely legal. I think that...
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I had a situation happen to me, and I was in a convenience store. I had money on me. I had things on me, and I'm doing certain things. So this individual he's all over me. And I stand there, and I use my calm, nonviolent dispute resolution type of verbiage because, you know, I kind of know where he's at, what he's doing. I'm watching, and he's getting closer and closer. And I'm thinking, the camera's right above me, the surveillance camera, so I'm looking really good on camera. I'm holding my own. The guy's on top of me. But then I finally said something, and it kind of diffused it. I mean, he walked away cursing me and all this kind of stuff. But I look at the situation and say, I'm just going to maintain myself, my composure. But if you don't have some type of training, you might freak out and do something stupid. You might start pulling your gun out and dropping it and shooting them in the foot or shooting somebody else. All sorts of things can happen if you're not trained. And the way I handle a situation all depends on how it's coming to me.
Okay, so let's say that you're in bed and it's 3 a.m. And by the way, if you're in your house or your office or in your vehicle and somebody is attempting to unlawfully enter, okay, and I say attempting, if they're attempting to unlawfully enter your home, your vehicle, or your office, okay, while those things are occupied, okay, like you're in the house and they're trying to unlawfully enter it, okay, with force, all right? And when we talk about force, I told you that term is a little bit ambiguous, but if they're breaking in, they're using force,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so if that's happening, it's going to be presumed that you had a reasonable belief that the force that you used was immediately necessary in a deadly force type of situation. It will be presumed, okay? And so as long as you haven't, like, provoked this person, you're not maybe standing in your yard saying, come on, dude, like this, you know, and you're on mm-hmm. you know, a surveillance video doing that, and then you run into your house real quick, and then he does it. I don't know what happened in that situation, really, but assuming that's not the case, and you're just in your house, and they're breaking into one of these places, you're gonna be protected, okay, by the very specific and strong words of the legislature. They want to make sure that the Castle Doctrine, similar, mm-hmm. is alive and well in Texas, because we want to protect people's homes and people's offices, right, and their vehicles, because these are the things where people need and want to be safe.
Let me give you, okay.
But let's say it's 3 a.m. and you've got a large living room, there's a hallway, and your bedroom's down the hallway, and you hear somebody breaking in the front door. What do you tell people?
It depends on their skill level. I know what I would do.
Oh, let's say no skill level.
If there's no skill level,
they've gone to the shooting range. They know how to shoot a weapon, but they haven't taken one of your self defense classes.
I don't know, man. Sometimes I just want to say, shut the closet door, call 911. Only if you're in the city. Let me make a story here, because it just segued into that, being in the city as compared to the country. In the country, it takes a lot longer for deputies to get there. It's a big freaking county, okay?
Yeah.
But if you're in town, you usually got DPS or local police or even the sheriff deputies going through town. So you got a lot more quicker response time. But if you're out there in the country and somebody's on your front porch and they're trying to break in, I'm going to say, okay, your call. Do what you want. I know what I would do. But what I'm saying is, in the city, if you got somebody out there on your front porch and they're not in yet, and you're on the phone with 911 and you're capable with your firearm, I say, look, they're on the porch. Technically, they're not in your home, okay? But once they break that plane, they are. Now, granted, if they're trying to break down the door, yes, that's a good means for you to be justified into self-defense. But to put the cards in my favor, if I'm experienced, I say to myself, you know, I can wait to the last minute. And I'll give you an example of what I do in class. I'm going to do that today. If you got two Glock 17s with 15 rounds each in the gun, and I got a little petite girl, and you got me, and there's two guys, they're twins, they look identical, they're huge and humongous, and they want to rape us both. They're 24 feet away. The little petite girl freaks out at 24 feet and empties 15 rounds into the guy. I do the same thing at 24 feet. Who's going to jail? It's probably going to be me, because I'm much more trained. I should have more time to do things. So using that scenario, here's what I would say. The more trained you are, the more time you have, the more options you have, which now let's go back to the house. The person's breaking in on the front porch. Because I'm trained, because I know what I'm doing, it gives me more time, and I'm a more relaxed state because I know what to do. I'm going to say, hey, man, you really don't want to do this. I'm telling you, you don't want to break through that door. You're breaking through the door. You don't want to do that. And I'm standing there. I've got a freaking Glock, 15 rounds, ready to go. As soon as they come in, it's over. But if I can keep using verbiage to say, don't, that's one more card stacked in my deck, God forbid, if I ever do have to go to court. I'm always thinking, how can I stack the deck? Because the courtroom is just a fighting ground for attorneys to see who's better. I have paused.
I mean, what you gave, though, is the ideal situation. I mean, that it doesn't get any better than that, almost. Like, you're telling the person, don't break in, boom, they break in, boom, they're gone.
That's okay. That's a person who's trained and can handle it. A person who's not trained, that's why I'm saying you might want to lock yourself in the closet or the bedroom, have the gun ready at the doorway, and call the police. And if they do come in, okay, go ahead. Because if somebody breaks in your house and you're not trained, there's a very good probability, if they're better than you, they're going to take your gun away or you're going to miss
them. I just think the time element. Do you have enough time to pull your phone? I mean, you think it's only three numbers, 911, but
it's not even. It's a push button. Just
you got, you gotta, you gotta. And see, I mean, does everybody know that?
That's why they need to train.
Does everybody know that? I mean, I guarantee somebody's gonna try to open up their phone. Some people don't have the fingerprint deal. So what if their phone is locked? They're gonna have to type in their code.
But you asked me what would a person who's trained do, and what would a person who's novice do? And
I said, we're talking about a novice. So I said not been trained by you.
Then I would say probably stay in your bedroom and call the police, and hopefully that's if you're in the city. If you're in the country, you may have to do something. So that's why I say getting certain types of guns, if you're not very proficient and you're not going to practice, there's certain guns that compensate for your inability to shoot well. Taurus judges, shotguns.
I was going to say, that's probably what I need after our little target.
I had a young lady come by and pick up a Mossberg Shockwave for that specific purpose. It's small, compact, maneuverability, and it's a devastating weapon. So it covers all bases. If you're a little bit nervous, that'll handle the problem. But you got to at least do some practice, and I know her, and she can do it.
But, too, you also want to look at the other kind of, like, social. And too, there's going to be some legal risk into this. But you don't – what if it's just some kind of kid or your uncle, right, coming to find you or coming to look for his drill in the garage because he's working on a late-night project?
That's where the experience comes in.
Okay.
A person like me would make sure I'd always identify the threat, but a person who's a novice may get a little nervous and shoot in the blind. I got story after story. I heard a noise, so I shot. And there goes their kid dead in the front yard.
Okay, and I mean, too, I hear a lot of people say, well, if they're in your house and they run away, you can't shoot them. Well, in my opinion, that's not true. I'm not telling you to shoot anybody that's running away. But I don't know that that's true. I'm not advocating doing that. But how are you going to know a lot of times? Right? If it's dark, especially, if you hear running, how do you know if they're running away from you or towards you in a close, confined space?
In that situation, Ross, I have to be very adamant on this. Do not shoot until you identify the threat. You must, ladies and gentlemen, you must identify the threat. You cannot shoot blindly. Sorry, you can't do it.
But I'm just saying, what if these things happen from a legal perspective? I mean, my.
Well, if it's at nighttime, wouldn't they have the presumption of being nighttime? It's a risky thing.
Yes, yes. I'm telling you from a legal standpoint, I think they absolutely would. Is there ever a situation maybe that an exception could come up to this presumption? Like you said, a good prosecutor, a biased judge, right? A county that maybe is heavy on wanting gun control. Mm-hmm. You get the right stew of circumstances, right? You may have a case where running away may be a problem, but I right now.
That's why I always want to stack the deck towards me.
I see that, but I don't see how that situation can arise, right, from the words of the statute. But you got to realize, too, that like I said, I don't deal with the perfect circumstance, right? You don't. If you did it perfectly, you're not coming to my office,
right? Right.
Okay, and so these aren't the cases that I get. And I'm telling you, how are you going to know the difference if somebody's running away from you or running towards you to rush you?
You know, there's this line from a Star Trek episode, original series. I quote it a lot because it really says a lot. It's the mirror-mirror situation. You got the good Kirk, the bad Kirk, and Spock is asking, Kirk asks Spock, how could you tell us differently so quickly? He goes, it's much easier for a civilized man to act like a barbarian than it is for a barbarian to act like a civilized man. So the civilized man is the person who is trained. The barbarian is the one who's not. So the barbarian is going to use stone, knife, blade, go crazy, whereas a civilized man will do what it takes to train, to be proficient, to get his skills down, and to wait to identify the threat and not be freaked out if something does happen. So you need to train. You need to be civilized in aggression. Civilized in aggression. Do I say put yourself in a box? Heck no. I'm just saying if it's time to get out of the box, your civilized decision lets you do that. Whereas if you're a barbarian at it and you're untrained, you're outside that box going rogue all the time. You can't do it.
This is why I did it the way. I think this was the best way because I think people are saying, like, if you're trained, you're not going to be a butthead. Right, and it's not going to look bad to a jury,
right?
Because you're not going to need to use, right, these outlandish type of barbaric movements and conduct because you're going to know exactly what you're doing.
the law is meant to keep us civil. When you go outside the rules of the law to a major extent, I'm sure you've got a buffer zone. But once you surpass the buffer zone, you start to look barbarian. And the people on the jury aren't going to like that.
But I will also say this, that if you're coming in to my house, mm-hmm. right, you're asking for the monster.
Well, let's put it on a general term then. What if you're in the parking lot? What if you're coming out of the Walmart parking lot? It's kind of dusky. It's not dark. It's not light. And we do the same scenario.
You no longer have this presumption. You're going to have to show that there was a reasonable belief that the deadly force was immediately necessary, right, to quell or, you know, prevent this other use of unlawful deadly force.
Would that be the same? Let's say the person jumps in the passenger seat and points a gun at you. Now he's in your quote unquote residency on wheels.
And you would get the presumption at that
presumption,
point.
Presumption, right. Okay. Yeah.
But if you're not to your car yet, it's not occupied, he confronts you, accosts you in the Walmart parking lot, and he pulls out a weapon, at this point, I believe you've got a right to use the deadly force. It was a reasonable belief that the deadly force was immediately necessary to prevent that actor's use of deadly force, because he has already threatened you that he will use deadly force if you do not do what he says. Okay, and you have a right to be where you are. You haven't provoked this gentleman or this woman, really.
You know, when you say this verbally, I'm saying not you, when anybody says this verbally, it can sound very complex. It's not. I mean, if we were to show what we just spoke about in words in physical action, you would see, oh, that's a no-brainer. So I don't want people, when they hear all this or read the black and white law in the books and the penal codes, to go, I don't get it. Sure, you get it. That's why in my class, ladies and gentlemen, which I have at 2 o'clock today, by the way, and it's still got seats open, I'm very dramatic in my scenarios. When I do a scenario to explain a penal code, trust me, you're not going to forget it, and it's going to stick with you. And you know,
the more sticky situation, because look, we just said that, but obviously you're probably not going to pull out your weapon, right? Because he already got his on you. So if you move, he's gonna.
I wouldn't say that either. I've read story upon story upon story.
I'm thinking about the general person.
Well, it depends. You know, if a person's got a drop on me, I'm saying it's not worth my wallet. Just here, take the wallet. But I'll tell you what, if there's a time in which that individual screws up and takes me off as his mark, he has become the mark.
And so if he's got his hands in his jacket, right, and he's coming towards you in an aggressive manner, and he's saying, and he's getting close, and then he comes and he says, you know, he's about to make a move. Are you justified at that point? Those are the gray areas. That's where we go, okay, that's where.
It's not really gray for me. I'll tell you why. I tell this to my students all the time. When I get in a situation like that and I think my life's on the line, I take that law book that I'm reading out of and I throw it across the room. I said, that law book doesn't mean squat to me anymore, because I'm on now automatic. If I think I'm about to go into the bow of the boat, I'm going to do what it takes to stay alive. Then I'll deal with the law. But at that particular moment, if something like that just happens to me and I'm like, whoa, because of all my training, I say, I am in fear for my life. I'm going to do what it takes to survive. If I am not going under the bow of the boat, I'm within the realm of that penal code to the best of my ability.
Better be judged by 12 and carried by 6.
That's right.
And, I mean, but those are the, from a legal standpoint,
yeah,
those are the cause of the problems. And think about it. You thought they had a gun, and you used deadly force, and they fall to the ground, and their hands come out of their pockets, and they have nothing.
Yeah.
How do you explain this? How do you explain this? Or you just shot a black kid in a hoodie.
Oh God! Could get the
see. I'm not speaking on Trayvon Martin case, whether it was justified or non justified. Again, I'm just telling you, you've got now a situation where you're going to have to explain,
mm-hmm.
and the more trained you are, you're going to be able to explain why you use it in this situation and why your fear or belief was reasonable and why you thought it was reasonably necessary.
And I'll tell you what, all that training can backfire sometimes because they put me in a higher standard.
I mean,
it's like a black belt. If a black belt breaks your neck and all I had to do is block and parry, then we say, all this training you do and you got to snap his neck? You can't do one of these quick block and parries? And here I am, as trained as I am, and that's why I was using the example of being raped at 24 feet, and I shoot this guy 15 rounds at 24 feet. I could wait till he's at 7 feet because I'm talking him down, running in circles, doing what I can, as compared to the girl she's scared to death, and at 24 feet, wastes him with 15 rounds.
Maybe you, Matt, because you're just...
Oh, stop.
That bad, okay? But I think... I think just having an LTC or having training for the general person. We talked about women and the increase in purchases of firearms, mm-hmm. but how the level of training that they're receiving, right, is not matching the level of sales. As far as when we look at
females to males. And so I think when you're trying to tell females it's a good thing for them to go get training, I don't think at the same time society can then say, you know, from a policy standpoint, can then say, but we're going to use that training against you. Okay, I think, you know, getting training is going to help you. And I think you can say, I had this training. I followed this training by Matt. Matt told me exactly what to do. And you're not going to be liable, right? You have a, there's no liability, right, from your standpoint. So it's, this is a good thing. That this is to protect you and to protect the person, the student that's getting trained, because they can say, I followed all the steps that Matt told me to follow. I did everything that I did, and I still felt like this was a threat. I still felt like this was a situation. I didn't have a choice. I went through the steps, calculated, boom, 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 and he was still coming at me. I still had no other choice. And you can say that you went through that mental process because you have had the training, and you can explain why you thought it was reasonably necessary, mm-hmm. right, to use immediate force, or the force that you used was immediately necessary.
Well, that's what I just said, but you said it so much nicer. That's what I said. I have all this training, but it could be used against me. But this is what.
I think that I said maybe you, because you're just like that, so much higher than everybody else.
No, stop.
But
man,
when I talk about like just a normal person getting training, I don't think that's going to backfire. I think everybody should get training. I don't think we should advocate, oh, that's going to actually hurt you in the long run because you've had training. No, I think that's going to help you because you're going to be able to say, I went through this mental process. Okay. And this is why I felt like I had no other choice. Mm-hmm. And believe it, it's not a no other choice type of situation. The standard is a reasonable belief that the force you used was immediately necessary. And if you were, and if you had a right to be where you were, and you were not provoking that person, retreat is not an option that the jury can consider. Okay, so that's not something you have to do. So when I say that's the only choice, no, that's not the standard. I don't mean to put it like that. The only choice you can stand your ground as long as we said you fall into those elements. You fall into those elements. The jury may not consider, right, your failure to retreat. Okay? And so if you've got a right to be where you are, you have not provoked the person, you're not otherwise committing a crime. I need to make sure I make that clear. You cannot be committing a crime, right, except for maybe like a traffic offense, Class C traffic offense. Okay? If you've got a right to be where you are, you're not committing a crime, you have not provoked this person, right, and you reasonably believe that the force was that you use was immediately necessary mm-hmm. to prevent the other's use of force against you, or deadly force. If you're going to use deadly force, then you're going to be justified.
That was 30 minutes, brother. That was fast and furious. We got another 1 or 2 minutes if you want. Ladies and gentlemen, real quick, if you want to give a call, 254-697-6633 with a question. You got an attorney here. You get some free advice. If you don't call, you're crazy. Here you got these attorneys on, super attorneys, attorneys extraordinaire. They can answer questions, give opinions with some good common sense to it. Give us a call, 254-697-6633. Ross, it's an intense thought process because there's so many different facets to it that could uplift you or could bring you down if a situation like that ever happens. You could be up and down in the same situation. Oh, he's absolutely justified. Whoa, he screwed up. Oh, he's back justified. Escalation of forces. And
do we have even like, can you give me like a 30 second, because I'm really interested in like, okay, if you yell versus just talking in a calm voice versus if you're whispering, but say the yelling versus.
We got a call. Let's see what the call is. Welcome to the Aaron's High Captain Major Radio Program. Who we got on the line?
Hey, my name is James.
Hey, James, how you doing? What you got?
Hey, I got a quick question. What kind of liability or what's the plan of action? Say if somebody threatens your life, if someone tells you they're going to come back and kill you or something like that, and you were to shoot that person.
Verbal provocation. Yeah, verbal provocation alone is not enough to use deadly force. But remember, we there's that cool case that I always like to talk about where the guy says, I'm going to kill you, just like that. I'm going to kill you. And he starts walking outside, and they believe that he has a weapon in his vehicle, right? Even though he didn't make a movement actually towards the person who chased him outside and used a weapon, right, to subdue that individual, use deadly force. He there was conduct involved with that threat, and there was a belief that he was going to a weapon. So that's why I try to get bogged down in these legal type of interpretations, because a lot of it is a factual type thing, and every case is going to be different. But if it's only verbal provocation, like let's say it's over the phone, okay, you need to actually go to the police in that situation, okay? You've got enough time there to do something about it. It's not something where you need to go over to him and take a weapon over and try to work it out, okay, you know, in an arguing match. But maybe if the person's there and saying, boy, I'm gonna kill you, boy, and starts coming after you, at that point, yes, I think, you know, there's conduct involved with that verbal provocation. I'm not going to say in every single instance, but I think that in many instances, as long as you can show you had a reasonable belief that he was going to use unlawful deadly force against you and that your deadly force was immediately necessary and you had a right to be where you were not committing a crime, okay, and you did not provoke him, at that point, you would have a right to use that deadly force.
James, you got a license to carry?
No, I don't.
I got a class at 2 o'clock. Why don't you come check it out? It's $60 for the class, and we go over all these penal codes and can talk about it. So if you're interested, come on, check it out.
That's promise you, you'll learn something. I think I got a couple.
Yeah, I'll probably take you up on that one of these days. Thanks.
Do you got something more specific? Did that answer a lot of what you were asking?
No, you know, that's, I mean, you know, logically, that's the way I feel about it, and that's what would happen. But legally, you know, legally and logically, it's not always.
I agree with that. I agree with that. You know, justice is not always fairness.
That's why I like to stack the deck in my favor, James. That's why I keep saying the more you know, the more you can make a better decision. I'm not saying you can't go outside the box. I'm just saying make sure it's a big box.
Uh-huh. James, thank you, though. You did raise an important point that probably I should have mentioned. You know, obviously there's tons of things that I could cover. But, yeah, verbal provocation alone by itself is not enough. But if there's some kind of action that gives you that reasonable belief, then that's great, man. We appreciate that call.
James, thanks for the call. Right, we got to get going, but we appreciate it. Make sure everybody knows that this is a great opportunity for you to give calls and get some advice or opinions or directions to which way to go with these great attorneys. But I'll tell you what, Ross, we are just about out of time. Why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you? And this segment is sponsored by Coppolino Dodd and Craig's Law Firm, and we got the attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross coming on most of the time, but Rick's always here to fill in your gaps. So tell us how they can get a hold of you.
105 East Main Street here in Cameron. Big Milk Cow on the side. Houston College Station, you can set up an appointment by giving me a call at 254-605-4140. That's 254-605-4140. You can email me. Again, we got questions all the time. If you do ask a question, please give your phone number. We love talking about it, but please give your phone number because I always have time to do it in email. So you can email me at Benton, B-E-N-T-O-N, at Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N. Dot legal. That's Benton at Watson dot legal. Thank you, man. I still
think you need to put a hay roll in your yard there to make it look good with that cow panic. All right, Ross. Thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you.
All right,
Trey. Let's take us out and we come back. Or if time's short, give me a commercial and we'll go right into Janae.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun.
Hi there, my lovelies. Thank you for listening to yet another segment of Tactical Snacking with me, Janae Goodman. Today, I want to feature some seasonal salsas and dips, so let's get snacking. Guacamole is a classic, and a simple one, too. All you need is 4 to 6 fresh avocados, 2 small ripe tomatoes, 1 small minced yellow onion or red onion, 1 to 2 bunches of chopped cilantro, lime juice, and salt and pepper to taste. Mash all your ingredients together and serve with tortilla chips or aside your dishes. This goes perfectly alongside roasted red salsa, and as with all the recipes I share with you, it's a tried and true favorite of mine. So this recipe only needs oil for coating, 8 Roman tomatoes, 2 sweet Texas yellow onions, 5 to 10 serrano or jalapeno peppers, 6 cloves of garlic, a bunch of cilantro with the stems removed, and 2 teaspoons of salt. Preheat your oven to about 400 degrees. Half your onions and tomatoes. If you plan on seeding your peppers, half those as well. In a large bowl, toss your tomatoes, onions, and peppers with enough oil to coat them and season with just a bit of salt. Spread your tomatoes, onions, peppers, and garlic out onto a sheet tray and roast until they're charred and soft, about 40 to 45 minutes. Once your vegetables have cooled, toss them in a food processor or blender along with 2 teaspoons of salt and your cilantro. Pulse until they're thoroughly combined. You can refrigerate your salsa until ready for use. Serve this with your choice protein and a corn or flour tortilla and spice it up with cilantro, sliced radish, onion, and a squeeze of lime. No party is complete without cheese dip, so to make your own, you can take a can of Rotel or roasted tomatoes and chilies and add them into a crock pot with 8 ounces of sharp cheddar or your favorite cheese blend. Add in a tablespoon of cornstarch and a 12-ounce can of evaporated milk. If you're not up for making your own cheese sauce, you can use a block of melting cheese and a can of evaporated milk instead. Melt it all together over high, stirring occasionally. If you're doing this by stovetop, heat your cheese and milk over medium heat instead and stir occasionally. Bump it up a notch by adding in ground cooked breakfast sausage, or for a Texas kick, you can add in chorizo, as suggested by Crystal Johnson from Houston, Texas. If you want a refreshing new spin on salsa, give this pomegranate mango salsa a go. This pairs well with fish and beef fajita tacos. In a medium bowl, you'll want to toss 1 cup of pomegranate seeds, 1 diced ripe mango, lime juice and the zest of 1 lime, half a bunch of cilantro, half a teaspoon of salt, 1/4 of a teaspoon of pepper, 1/4 of a diced medium red onion, and 1 seeded and minced jalapeno. This salsa will make your tongue tango for more, and it's sure to brighten your day. And don't be afraid to throw in some diced avocado if you're feeling it. Spinach artichoke dip goes great with crackers or chips. For this dip, mix together 1 cup of real mayo, not Miracle Whip, 8 ounces of softened cream cheese, half a cup of Parmesan cheese, 10 ounces of boxed frozen chopped spinach, 1 14-ounce can of artichoke hearts, and half a teaspoon each of garlic salt and ground pepper. Make sure your artichokes and spinach are fully drained of water before adding them to your bowl of ingredients. Mix thoroughly and heat in a microwave-safe bowl or in an oven-safe dish at 375 degrees until the top is lightly golden. If you want to get fancy, serve your dip in a bread bowl. You can make your own by hollowing out a round loaf of French bread. Toasting your bread is completely optional. Tzatziki is a cool summertime favorite here in Texas. Traditionally, it's drenched all over gyros, which are Mediterranean pita bread wraps that are filled with pork, lamb, beef, or chicken, and finished with lettuce and tomato. We all know that Texans aren't always the most traditional people, so I'll share this recipe with you so that you can drench it all over whatever you want. You'll want to stir together the following. 1 cup of plain yogurt, 1 cucumber, seeded and finely grated, 2 cloves of finely minced or grated garlic, lemon juice and the lemon zest of 1 lemon, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped dill, 1 teaspoon of finely chopped mint, a small squeeze of honey, about half a teaspoon, and salt and pepper to taste. If you missed out on last week's summer bites, be sure to stop by the homepage of thecultivatedclassroom.com, where I feature refreshing drinks and recipes to keep you cool for the summer. As always, drop me a line at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com if you have culinary questions or ideas that you'd like me to feature on the show. If you're still craving more, be sure to join me next week, where I've got plenty more for us to dip into. But until next time, stay hungry, my friends.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lowell Funeral Home in Cameron talks about being just a phone call away.
We are at a family's disposal 24/7. You don't get an answering machine. You may be talking with the family late at night or thought of something. You can pick up that phone and call and know that you're going to talk to one of us.
Call anytime, 254-697-3661.
You will feel like you are the only family that we're working with.
It is now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
And go.
Good morning, everyone. Remember back, I guess it was a 3 or 4 or 5 months ago when it was down around 25 degrees, 20 degrees, and we were wishing it would warm up? Well, we got our wish. Now I'm wishing it was back in January when we had some cool weather. It's miserable outside, and I know that a lot of people like this hot weather, but we could sure use some rain. But anyhow, today I thought about what we're going to talk about, and I thought about some things that we could say that, you know, after almost 2 years of shows, you start wondering about what kind of topics you're going to come up with. Well, then I started thinking, you know, there's something I haven't spoke about, and that's about what do you do if you get run over and whoever run over you decides to leave? We commonly call that a hit-and-run accident. Well, we're going to talk about that this morning, and I'll put a little bit of time into that. But first thing I'm going to talk about is, you know, this is the weekend before the 4th of July. And I realize that all of us out here in Texas, as well as some of the other western states, think the way to celebrate 4th of July is to have big explosions, you know, whether it's a gun or whether it's fireworks. Well, let's stick to just using fireworks, folks. If you're going to use fireworks, as dry as it is, as miserable as outside, please take care. You know, there's a lot of wildfires that are going across the nation right now. They had a big one in Texas here about 3 or 4 weeks ago. There's two huge fires burning out of control in Colorado right now, and it's all over the United States. So, folks, if you're going to do fireworks, do me a favor. Be careful with them. Make sure that you've got someone with some water or someone around in case a fire does start. And above all, use fireworks and not a gun. Now, you know, you're driving on a highway, a busy highway, when you notice a speeding car coming up behind you. You think, surely it's going to slow down. That car is just going way too fast. It's starting to zigzag between lanes, nearly missing other cars, and you realize right off the bat that that driver is either a impaired driver or somebody that is just in a real hurry or distracted driver. Before you can do anything, before you can react, it catches up with you and clips the side of your rear end of your car when it passes you. So now you've been wrecked, and I don't care what it is, even if it's a small scratch, that's thousands of dollars in today's body shop world. Momentarily, you're stunned. You think, what do I do? You ask yourself if your passenger okay, and you look at them and you pull up the side of the off the side of the road to start checking your car out. Well, did you get a second check or a second shot? The bad guy is racing away, clearly with no intention of stopping to exchange insurance information or driver's license information, as that fact. That's when you realize you're now the victim of a hit-and-run driver, and the normally post-crash procedures that we all know how to do and what we're told to do, have been told to do ever since we've been driving, they don't necessarily apply anymore. So what I thought I'd do is give you some ideas about what your insurance could do and what you could do to get some claims going if you have to. And that's the bottom line, folks. You know, most of the police department, or sheriff's office, or highway patrol, when you call them out, you know, you're wanting a report basically for your insurance company. Let's be honest. And sure, in a hit-and-run driver, a hit-and-run accident, we want the bad guy. We want him prosecuted. We want him thrown under the jail because he took a chance and hurt somebody. But, you know, that doesn't happen, folks. Just a few minutes ago, I was with a good friend of mine, a 30-year veteran of the Waco Police Department who just recently retired. And one of his jobs was investigating hit-and-run accidents. And he talked a little bit about what it takes to investigate a hit-and-run accident, which is basically the same thing we're all taught in either a police academy or through accident reconstruction, et cetera. But, folks, one of the things he did say is way too many times people expect too much from a hit-and-run accident. And that is never more true than the fact. You know, some of you may know that in my afterlife with law enforcement, I work now for a legal firm as an investigator, basically looking at crashes and looking at accidents and other things. Over the last 2-3 months, I've seen a tremendous amount of upswing in the number of hit-and-run accidents that I'm having to go out on to take information for either a lawsuit or a claim to be made. Folks, people are hitting and running and leaving at an alarming rate. It's up 10 times more than it was 10 years ago even. So the first thing you need to do is you need to pull over to the side of the road, take a safe place, and write down as much information as you can. Now this policeman friend of mine from Waco told me that the two things that they're going to ask of, number one, did you get a license plate number of the car? That's the number one thing you need to do. And were you able to see or recognize anything about the possible driver? If you didn't see the driver and you saw the license plate only, the chances are we may can help you with insurance and law enforcement, but the chances of prosecuting that person, you got to put somebody behind the wheel. Somebody has to say that specific person was driving. That's the law, folks. Now, truth, the law enforcement has a way of making people confess. I will tell you right now. No, I'm just kidding. You know, we've got to have enough to go on. Law enforcement has to have enough information to be able to say that specific person was driving that vehicle at the time it struck you. So, with that being said, you know, you need to make sure you pull over. And if you can get anything about the car, get that. But even if the other car's make, model, and color can't help, or you can't see any of that, if you can just recognize things such as a big red car, a big red pickup, a big blue pickup, whatever it may be, that is very important. Do take pictures of anything you can with your cell phones. Now, folks, you don't realize how important your cell phone cameras are. You know, before the advent of cell phones and telephone and cameras built into the cell phones, getting documentation on a hit and run was almost next to nothing. As a matter of fact, if you're in any kind of crash, whether it's a hit and run or even where if it's just a simple two-car collision and everybody stays at the scene, get your cell phone out, take as many pictures as you can, including the picture of the driver of the other car, take the license plate number of the other car, the color of the other car, take a picture of your car, anything that's left on the ground. If you know any witnesses, get a photograph of them if they'll allow you to, and find out their information. Do take pictures, once again, and make sure those pictures come out. Ask any witnesses to describe what they saw and write down their testimony for you or their names for you. And, you know, hopefully they'll stick around until law enforcement arrives. But if you're in a larger city, it may take an hour for law enforcement to show up. But number one, do call the police. If the damage is minor and no one is injured, the police might not come to the crashing in all honesty in big cities. They may tell you just to send in a blue form, what is known as a blue form. But however, if your insurance policy requires you to notify the police of any hit-and-run accidents, be sure to file a report, whether it's a scene by phone or at the police station. You may have to take the time to go to the police station or the sheriff's office or the highway patrol office. The number one thing is you need to make a phone call. You need to let people know about it. And most law enforcement, especially in hit-and-run accidents, will respond to the scene. If you're injured, it now becomes a felony offense if they hit and run. And unfortunately, a lot of people think that the police can cure miracles. That's not always the case, folks. Not every miracle can come from the police department. We have got to rely on you as a victim to be able to use your eyes, ears, senses to be able to give us the information for that. If there's any debris from the other car left at the scene, if the police doesn't pick it up, or if the wrecker driver doesn't pick it up, you go ahead and pick that up. At least take a picture of that debris. If from that we can match, if it's bad enough and it's important enough, the law enforcement can send it to a laboratory where paint samples can be matched, etc. You know, once again, the whole purpose of a hit-and-run accident is the other person doesn't want to be caught for some reason. Either he doesn't have insurance, or he or she doesn't have a driver's license, or maybe their license is suspended, or maybe they are driving a car that doesn't belong to them. Whatever the sundry of reasons are, it's important that you take the bull by the horns and you document everything that you know how to document. Folks, hit and runs, like I said a few moments ago, are on the increase tremendously. How many of you have ever been to a parking lot, say at a large shopping center or a large grocery store, and you come out and your side of your car has got a big dent in it? Now, the chances of being able to get that solved are nil and none, to be honest with you. You'll call the police or you'll call somebody. They'll come out and they'll take a report in most cases, but you expect them to do miracles. That's not going to happen. It just is not going to happen. And true, it does aggravate us, and it makes us so angry that somebody would take that chance with our own vehicle, and someone would hurt us and leave like that. But, folks, that's what we carry insurance for. And I know what you're saying. Well, I don't want to use my insurance. I don't want to cope. Sometimes you got to, folks. That's the bottom line. Sometimes you just have to. And as much as we don't want to do that, unfortunately, that's what we carry that insurance for. Hit-and-run accidents happen. They're going to continue to happen, but it's important that we get as much information as we can. You know, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't play detective on your own, and don't try to chase down the other car. You might be tempted to try to get the last plate number, et cetera, of the car while you're chasing it. The problem with chasing another car is you're putting other people at risk. You're putting your lives at risk. That person is going to try to flee. That person is going to try to get away from you. And now we have two people that are driving unsafely, and if an accident happens, there is some liability that's attached to that. If you can safely see where a car is going, do that. I'll give you an example of what happened this past week. I was investigating a hit-and-run. Actually, it was a pedestrian hit-and-run at a very large, actually the largest retailer in America that tells you where it was at, and one of the adjacent cities. The person was walking out carrying their groceries, and a car comes speeding through the crosswalk where the people were walking, hit the person, knocked them down, scattered their groceries, and took off. Well, witnesses and some other people saw where that car had parked in the parking lot to try to hide. Fortunately, the police were close by, and they were able to apprehend the person. Now, did the person who was knocked down have some injuries, had some minor injuries? Absolutely. The police did not arrest that person that was in that car. You say, well, why didn't they arrest it? Because if it's up to the police officer's discretion, a citation was issued to that person for what is known as fail to stop and render aid, FSRA. That's the same. If you hear that word used, that is the same as hit and run. There are two categories in Texas. We have misdemeanor FSRA and we have felony FSRA. Felony FSRA becomes a felony if someone is injured, incapacitated, or someone is killed. So, folks, be sure to understand that. This person, for instance, just got a citation for it, but they were able to get all the information to complete for the insurance companies. So it's important that you do that. And, you know, number one, you've got insurance. Use that insurance. Know if you're covered or not. You know, it's hard to believe that someone would just cause an accident on the road and just take off, but it happens all the time. The number one thing you need to do, and I'll say this again, is stay at the scene. Don't go chasing people. You know, it's your job to be able to do what you know that's right. You know, and over the last, since 2000, The latest statistics from the Insurance Council says that 15% of all accidents are involving hit-and-run accidents. That's almost, it's 1.5 out of 10. Think about that. And I know who has to pay for that. You do and I do. When we get our insurance, we know that our insurance is jacked up. We know that our rates are increased because of somebody who takes advantage of things like that. You know, and here is my little preaching to you. If you carry only the state-mandated liability insurance, your insurance will not cover the cost of a hit-and-run damage. I'll tell you right now. Please be aware of that. Now, I know we don't like to pay their insurance companies money, but, folks, that's what you have insurance for. Liability insurance does not cover the financial cost of your property or person in the event of an accident. Liability insurance only covers the cost of the bodily injury and property damage of the other motorist in an accident. So, once again, if you're a hit-and-run accident, if you're a hit-and-run victim, and you only have liability insurance, you're out of luck. The kind that you need to look at that protects you in hit-and-run events, of course, is uninsured motorist protection, comprehension, and collision. Those coverages vary by state to state, but you also got to know how to protect yourself and do it by carrying that insurance. Now, once again, I'm going to wrap up here shortly, but just once again, here are some things that you really need to look at if you're ever the victim of a hit-and-run accident. Number one, the color of the vehicle. The make, model, and approximate year, if you can recognize that of the vehicle. Above all, if you can see a license plate or any part of the license plate, the direction the car was heading, or if you can see any witnesses who may stick around and give you information as well. Once again, you should also always take as many pictures as you can. Try to recognize whether the driver is wearing red shirt, blue shirt, purple shirt, white, black, purple, polka dot, whatever the race of the person is, and try to get as much information as you can. Getting the details right is incredibly important, especially when you're making a claim with your insurance agent. You know, write everything down. That'll help you remember the details. Don't try to keep that in your memory. You know, once you file, and here's the one thing that I will tell people because they ask me this all the time. I don't want to call my insurance because it'll make my rates go up, folks. Once you file the report with the police, contact your insurance agent. Let them know what happened. You know, let's face it, car accidents are the worst, and not having sufficient insurance to protect you can be painful for you and your wallet. You know, get covered. Be able to cover yourself. Get information that's going to help protect you in the time of hit and run. You know, I've had my truck hit in the parking lot before. I know what it's like. I had a police car one time hit and run. And nobody, you think, would ever hit a police car and not stay at the scene of the crash. But think about it. Many times these people have been hit and run, drivers have been drinking, or maybe they've got something in the vehicle they don't want you to know about. Whatever the case may be, it's important that you get as much information as possible. So, folks, hit and run drivers are something we have to deal with. It's something that you're going to have to deal with, especially if you're a motoring public, as we most all of us are. But get the information, use your cell phone cameras, and document as much as you can, as quickly as you can. And last but not least, folks, just a couple of things. I know that a lot of you may have known some of the people that worked for Lockridge Priest up in Gatesville this past week. It's where most of my family lives. Say prayers for those family members and those people up there. Be safe, be calm. And I hope all of you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious 4th of July. Remember what it stands for, what it's all about. It's not about hot dogs, apple pie, and all that. It's about our freedom and our country. So have a great week, everybody. Be safe, and remember safety when you're using fireworks. Take care.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cabin Venture Radio Program. Again, it's June 30, 2018. We're here live for the next 36 minutes, and we're into our Product Spotlight segment. If you've been listening for a while, you know the sponsor of the Product Spotlight is A&C Firearms. Arch Kuntz is the owner. He's an awesome guy. I've known him for years. He's got a great shop there, a great crew. He's got Clint, Mike, Dennis. They've got all sorts of products there, guns, pistols, revolvers, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, accessories, the works. So we're doing a product spotlight today, and that product spotlight is the Taurus Model 905 9mm revolver. He's got it on his shelf. Now, look, if you go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me with a short video there. You get to see what it looks like. It's a neat-looking snub-nose revolver in 9mm. You need to check it out. It fits a niche perfectly, and I personally think it's great for women. But I'm going to read an article. It's a gun review. It's by Mike Picone. And he's talking about the Taurus 905 9mm revolver. And I like to read these reviews because I always like to hear somebody else's opinion. I either say yay or nay to it, or it gives me another angle to talk about. So let's see here. The Taurus 905 review, 9mm. In today's review, I take a look at the Taurus 905, a small frame 9mm revolver. A 9mm revolver may seem like an oxymoron. Now this guy, he's got a lot of short sentences here, so bear with me. Revolvers don't chamber 9mm cartridges, right? Well, the 905 does. And there's others, too, but the Taurus one looks pretty slick. That's me talking. The Taurus 905 basics. The 905 is a steel frame revolver with fixed sights and a 2-inch barrel, making it a competitor to other small concealed carry guns like the J-frame revolvers for Smith & Wesson, from Smith & Wesson. Like the Smith & Wesson revolvers, the cylinder rotates counterclockwise. The cylinder release operates by being pushed forward toward the cylinder. Standard operating procedure there. The 905 has a fully shrouded extractor rod with a full under-barrel lug. I personally like that. The additional weight at the end of the barrel helps with recoil and also protects the rod from being bent while carrying. The rear sight on the 905 is a notch in the frame, while the front sight is a fixed ramp. The front sight is black with serrations to help prevent glare. If you're not familiar with that, if you have a slick of metal there and the sun hits, it's going to glare up and you'll get a more difficult to get a sight picture with the slots in there or the serrations in there. It cuts down on that glare. The standard grips are hard rubber and they cover the back strap of the gun. The fill, the hand, as well as any other small grips do, are slightly better than some. Okay. Poorly written, but I got the point. The 905 has an exposed hammer, allowing for single-action shooting. The top of the hammer spur is aggressively textured, removing almost all chance of your thumb slipping off. That's important. The 905 chambers the 9mm cartridge, which makes this unusual. What makes this unusual is the fact that the 9mm is a rimless cartridge. Most revolvers are designed for rimmed cartridges. The rim is what catches onto the edge of the cylinder and ejector star, allowing the cartridge to seat properly. The same rim is what is used by the ejector star to extract the fired brass from the cylinder. A rimless cartridge does not have the needed rim for proper seating into the cylinder or extraction after firing. While there are a few alternatives, the most popular method of using rimless cartridges in a revolver is by using the full moon clips. These clips are thin pieces of metal that our rimless cartridges snap into. Then the entire clip with 5 rounds drops into the cylinder. The clip allows the cartridges to seat properly and the brass to be ejected after firing. While rimless cartridge revolvers have never been mainstream, various manufacturers have made revolvers chambering the 9mm, 45 ACP, and the 40 Smith & Wesson. Okay, now the Taurus 905 revolver comes with five full moon clips. The clips worked flawlessly with dummy rounds and dry firing exercises and with real cartridges on the range. Reloads with full moon clips are much faster than with traditional rimmed cartridges. However, loading and unloading the clips with the cartridges does take time. It's not a difficult process, however. And it's true. I mean, it's an extra step you got to do. But what's nice about it is the commonality, if that's a word, of the 9mm cartridge. The Taurus 9mm revolver performed well on the range. The 905 offered a heavy but smooth double-action trigger pull and a very clean single-action pull. The much lighter single-action pull averaged about 5 pounds. I have to say the single-action pull was extremely nice on the 905. There was no take-up, just a clean break when pressed. Reliability of the 905 was very good. The 9mm offers a significant power step-up as compared to the 38 Special, the typical round for the small-frame revolvers. While short-barreled handguns tend to bleed off velocity pretty quick, the 9mm tends to turn its velocity several hundred feet per second faster than the 38 Special. Now, here's the specifications. It's a model 905 BS. I'm sorry, B2, not BS. The caliber is 9mm, 5 rounds, 2-inch barrel, 6.5-inch overall length, width is 1 3/8, overall height is 4.37 inches, weight unloaded, 22.2 ounces. And if you go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, you get to see me handling the firearm, so you get a visual on it. The conclusion here now is that the Taurus 905 revolver was a fine shooting handgun, offering a nice balance of size and power. For a concealed carry gun or a backup gun for a police officer, I think this Taurus would serve well. The weight is slightly more than an aluminum-framed revolver of similar size. However, the additional weight is not so much to make it uncomfortable to carry all day. If you're interested in carrying a 9mm revolver, I definitely suggest checking this gun out. Now, look, this is me talking now. I say this for the ladies because I say this for only one reason about the ladies. A lot of ladies have a tendency to direct themselves towards snub-nosed revolvers. And there's two problems with a snub-nosed revolver when it comes to a woman of a petite size. It may not fit their hand properly, and they've got a long trigger pull to make it work. And as a bonus, it's usually a 38, 357 or higher, and the recoil from a gun like that can be a little bit overpowering for them. So here you have an idiot gun, and I say that with respect. An idiot gun, I mean, you just pick it up, pull the trigger, in a 9mm, gets the job done in a fail-safe type of mechanism with a common round. So if you do have an automatic pistol in 9mm, you can go from your auto to your snub nose with the same type of ammo. So it's a great combination. Check it out. Go to ANC Firearms in Hidenham or call them at 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard it here on the radio. Check it out on the Facebook page. Like us on Facebook while you're there. Give them a call. Tell them you want it. You heard it on Aaron's Gun Shop or Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program, and you want to buy it now. Remember, support the sponsors who support us. It's a circle of life. You support them, they support me. You get to hear great radio, okay? So, ANC Firearms, Hidenhammer, 254-983-4417. Trey, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have the awesome Vicky Gozer. We're going to be talking. This show is a prepper show to some degree. We're going to prepare for death. She's going to talk about how to getting your funeral services ready and maybe some other questions outside that room. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Hidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Hidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bald Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bald Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775. Everybody, the Aaron's High Cap Adventure. They're giving me crap on this end of this mic here. Okay, everybody's always picking on me. I don't know. Okay, topic of interest. I wanted to go over some dates real quick. Today at 2 o'clock, I've got a license to carry class. I do have some seats available, ladies and gentlemen. If you're looking for a license to carry class, you need look no further. You take my class, you will be impressed, and you will not forget. And you will learn a lot. So give me a call or give me an email or whatever. Let me know you're coming. It's $60 for a new class, $40 for a refresher. I'm not kidding. You will leave remembering the class. July 4th, do I need to say any more? Just remember why July 4th has happened. Salute those people in uniform and all the good politicians who try to keep us straight, okay? July 6th is 2 for a night. That's Friday night, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Come with somebody, and that somebody gets in for free to shoot at the range for free. Range time is free for the second person. July 13th is the next round robin. If you want to learn how to use different types of weapons, get some good training, do some shooting, have some fun, that's the day to be there for sure. And it's only $20 to enter. Who knows? You get some great training, and you'll walk out with a nice prize. July 20th is ladies' night. And how do you always say it, Trey? You don't care how they associate themselves? What's the term?
What gender they associate with.
I don't care, man. I don't care who you are. If you bring somebody or something that identifies as a woman, they get in to shoot for free, okay? So those are the dates. Check them out. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the website. Look at all the dates, times. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Give us a call here at 254-697-6633, and I'll answer your question. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. To my left, I have the awesome Vicky Goza. Vicky, it's a pleasure to have you on the air and the studio.
Thank you.
For those of the people out there who don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and then we can get into what we're going to talk about.
My husband and I own Mark Burns Laywell Funeral Home. And personally, I do all the hair and makeup. So be nice to me. I can make you look like dirt. So.
We all turn to worm dirt sooner or later.
Right.
Okay. All right, and how long have you been doing it, Vicki?
Well, we have owned Mark Burns Laywell since 1998, so it's 20 years, actually 20 years this month. And
I got to stop you right there. I'm a little confused. Uh-huh. The name, because I noticed in some other advertisement that you do, you got Goes a Service.
And Goes then, a Funeral Services.
And then you got the name down here. How does this all work?
Goes a Funeral Services is the company that owns Maurik Burns Laywell. That Goes a Funeral Services is like an umbrella. It allows us to branch out to do cemetery work or provide other services. Where the funeral home is straight up the funeral home.
Do you ever get the questions, why is the names different?
No, never.
Really? Now, I get people always asking me, who's Aaron? Question, who's Aaron?
The big question is, why doesn't it say Maurik Burns Laywell Goza? Yeah,
exactly.
Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay. My dad in New York, he owned a liquor store. It was called Rinaldi Liquor. And my name is not Rinaldi, okay? And they go, why did you do that? I go, well, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Exactly.
So there you go. Okay. So here you are. You got this necessary and great and top-notch facility to take care of us who go to the other life, okay? And I got a bunch of questions. I'm going to be all over the map here, but fortunately, I wrote you a bunch of questions, and I don't know how you want to do this, but if you know, you got your answers down here. Why don't you explain what the question was, and then people can take their notes.
Okay. One of the questions that you asked was about the business and how old it is. This business was started by Bill Maurik in 1908. So it is 110 years old this year. It actually started out in the back of a furniture store.
Wow.
Yes. And
did they use, they didn't use the old crates for the furniture?
Well, they built the caskets in the back of the furniture store.
You know why I asked you that?
Why?
Because Ford, when he was building his Model Ts, he made a requirement for certain parts to come in oak-cased boxes, and he would cut those boxes in half and turn them into seats.
Oh, my.
So okay. Utilizing what you got, but go ahead.
But anyway, and of course, way back then, the hearses, if you will, were also the ambulances. So it could be the hearse taking you to the hospital, or the hearse bringing you to the funeral home.
Amen. Saving time.
Depending on the need.
Talking
That's
about
exactly
efficiency, right?
Exactly.
Okay. What else we got here?
You had asked if we were members of any associations. We are.
I think that's very important, because I know when you go into a specialty service like you provide,
yes,
it's important to know where you're getting training or credits,
yes,
credentials.
Yes. We belong to the National Funeral Directors Association, so that is a nationwide, and they have resources that we have access to. And
like what? What kind of resources?
Well, like anytime there's a change in the rules, they will send that information to us. And there have been a few rule changes over the years.
And that pops a flag. Maybe we can talk about those rules, because I think we had talked about it off-air about that,
okay,
so we'll talk about
it. Okay. And It's just good to know what's going on in the rest of the states.
Okay. And we're
number three.
Yeah.
Okay. You asked if we ever outsource.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that.
I'll tell you what. There may be somebody who understands that funeral service is an important thing because they're business-minded,
yes,
and they haven't a clue. So they say, you know, Vicky, she knows what she's doing. I get the customer call, and I'm like, I have no clue. Vicky, help me out. Take care of this person. Is the person, when the customer comes to you, you're the one doing from A to Z?
A to Z. That's right. We do. However, if we are in a situation, there are some situations, like if someone is out. We just had a service for someone who'd passed away who was out of state.
Mm-hmm.
We had to outsource with another funeral home to pick them up and do the preparation and ship them in to us. So there are some extenuating circumstances that we can't just get there immediately.
I'm making notes as you talk. I'm thinking, oh, I got to ask this question too.
But about 98% of our business is all in-house. That includes the service. And it's not just the funeral service. There's always a service before the funeral. There's the visitation, the rosary, the wake, prayer service, or whatever.
Do you do different? I think one of my questions was, do you do all different types of religions?
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And we'll talk about some of that.
Okay.
I've been adventures. And so it's necessary to be able to function with all the things that can go on. But we also do all the cemetery work,
mm-hmm,
and the preparation. Everything is in-house.
So when you say cemetery work, you're talking to actually digging the grave?
Digging the grave, to selling the markers, do the custom curbing around those. And also, we talked earlier, one of the things that we do, you'd asked about the dipping of the grave, the settling.
Settling of the grave, huh?
And we provide, we have someone in-house that goes out and actually helps fill that in to keep that level. You know, sometimes after a big rain, there'll be a settling.
Okay, we're clover leafing here. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Let's finish it up.
Okay.
The dirt settling, and we had talked about the concrete liners.
Yeah, the liners. There's plastic. There's concrete. There's bronze. There's above ground liners.
We're dead. What does it matter, you know?
Well, it's the family choice.
What's
funeral?
You looked at me when you said bronze. Is bronze.
Copper. Yeah. So, that's some high-end stuff.
Is it because it lasts a lot longer?
Yeah. But the funerals are not for the dead.
That's right.
They're for the living.
That's right.
You know, we're celebrating a life, and that's the way we prefer to think about it. But it's really a send-off for the family.
Well, I don't know. I've talked to some people, and they go, hey, when I die, this is what I want. I want this music played. I want this going on.
Oh, so we get that all the time. Yes.
Okay. What else we got on the list here?
Okay. Well, you were asking about the types of services that we provide. Well, there's basically three types of services. There's a traditional, that's with the embalming, a visitation, or whatever, the evening before, the day of, and then the actual funeral service. There's a graveside service. They don't want the visitation. Mm-hmm. They just want everybody gather out at the cemetery, have a few words and a prayer, and it's the end, amen. And then there's the cremation service.
But is that services based on types of religions? Because I know, like, for example, Catholics, they always want to have the wake and check it out. I don't know how it is for Baptists or anything like that.
Only until recently, the Catholic Church did not believe in cremations, but that's just changed over the past few years.
It's amazing to me how a religion can take their works off the Bible and then decide, well, you know, we're going to change policy. How does that happen, man? That just drives me nuts.
A lot of that's man-made. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, but within those three types of funerals, then it's anything goes. If your traditional service, it can be, if you want a marching band, or if you want, I think there was one in which everybody stood and sang On Yo High. That was the closing song.
Okay.
We've got some diehard camera nights.
I'm telling you, man.
And it's all the bells and whistles that you choose. And again, the services are going to depend on your beliefs. We've had services where they didn't want religion to be a part of it. Okay. We have services where religion is all of it.
Is all of it, huh?
And it just depends on those beliefs.
And you can accommodate all those.
Yes, we can accommodate all of it. Absolutely.
When you first started doing this, did you do that? Or did you, like, you realize, you know, we need to help?
It was so funny. Maurice, after he graduated, his uncle and his mom and dad owned a funeral home in Rosebud. And we decided not to raise Ryan in a big 5A school. Let's go to a 2A and let him see the world from two different sides. And Maurice came to me and he says, it's about time you saw and understood what it is I do. And he says, Vicki, it's science. You take the emotion out. It's science. And he explained to me what I was going to see, and he explained what I was going to hear, and I went in and was able to observe.
Which brings me a question. Did he get into it because he's a scientific type of person, or did he get into it because it's a business that needs to be done?
He was actually working on an engineering degree.
How do you go from this to that?
I know, it's a funny story. His uncle's health began to deteriorate a little bit, and his mom and dad had put their life savings into that funeral home. And so we'd been talking about what would it take for us to move to a small little town. And so this just was a God-led thing, without sounding hokey. It just was. And he called me one day, and he said, honey, What if I said I wanted to reverse roles? I said, what you talking about, Willis? He says, well, if I quit school, I could get my degree in 1 year. I said, no, you can't. You have many years on that engine. He says, well, what if I wanted to get a mortuary science or applied science in mortuary? I said, well, I guess that means I have to find a job. And 2 weeks later, I was back in the career that I had before I became a stay-home mom. And he turned in his notice, went back to school full-time. And then, of course, he had to supplement a little bit on the sides. And he had to do an internship at a funeral home there in Houston. And it's just gone from there.
Wow, it's amazing.
Gone from there.
You know, you plan one thing, it ends up being another. It's
yeah, I mean, he began working nights in 1990 with Ed Laywell. And then Ed had had a heart attack and said, I can't do this at this pace on my own. And Maurice goes, well, I'm your man. And so our son graduated from Rosebud Lot mm-hmm. in 94. And a couple of weeks later, I found a hat because I wasn't seeing my husband anymore. We moved to Cameron. And then in 98, Ed said, I've reached the milestones that I wanted to reach. I'm ready to sell and retire. And you get first shot. And that was in 98. Wow. So we jumped right into buying a funeral home.
It's amazing how it works like that.
It does.
I hear that kind of stuff all the time. Yes. You know, you're going one direction. Bam! There you go in the other. All right, let's get back on track. Okay. I want people to know
all
what's
right.
going on here.
You had kind of asked, what are the basic costs? Well, there are three major things that make up the cost of a funeral. One is a service charge. That's where we go pick up. That's where we do the preparation and the use of the facility, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's all set. The next largest expense is going to be the cost of the casket.
Let's clarify that real quick. I had a question. The difference between a casket and a coffin.
A coffin is six-sided, and that's in Europe.
That's like Dracula's in.
Yes.
Okay.
And a casket in the United States is square. It's
okay.
rectangular.
Just a factoid. There you go.
Yeah. And the last big cost of a funeral is the cemetery charges. And those vary depending on which cemetery that you want. We don't have any control over that. Then we have what's called cash advances. That would cover flowers. You want to place the order for a casket sprayer or easels or something through us as part of the contract. We call, we get the price, and we add that to the contract. Honorariums. If you've asked someone to come in and play the organ or the minister or someone to come in and sing, you decide it's customary that you give them a little stipend for doing that, and that there's no set amount.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to you. And then the cost of the death certificates. Some people only want 5, and some people want 25.
Who would they go to?
Okay, you have to have a death certificate to change a mortgage.
Okay, I got you.
Credit cards.
Mm-hmm. So they're not trying. So they don't think you're trying to fraud them out of
right,
money.
Right. Okay. Exactly. And those are. And then obituaries. Some people write novels for their obituaries,
mm-hmm.
and some people just want this little bitty tiny thing. So if you want a custom obituary,
it's going to cost you.
Then it's going to cost. And that's not. We don't make money off of any of those things. Those are charges that are direct from the providers of that service. So our average funeral right now is about $7,500.
That's a lot of money for a dead person, isn't it? Don't you think? No, I don't mean it in the sense. It's just like you look at somebody who's dead, and it's for the living. These people for the living
right?
are like.
But we go back to those. We can't control the price that casket makers want to charge for caskets. We can't control the cemetery charges. We can't control some of this, and so this $7,500 would incorporate.
No, what I'm getting at is there's mm-hmm. people who may not be able to do that, and so you have this other option of cremation.
Yes.
How do they? So when you look at that, you say, "Listen, I understand whoever.
Okay.
I understand grandchildren that you got it, but you don't have mm-hmm. the money to do this. But we have this option. Is that an option for you? Talk about cremation.
Yes, cremation is certainly an option, and it has become more and more popular. But again, it's what you want. We do cremation services where they want to do a prayer service or a visitation or even a rosary. before, mm-hmm. in which case the body would need to be prepared, embalmed and prepared. And then after that, or after the funeral service, the body would then be cremated. Then we have what's called direct cremation. The person has passed. We go pick them up. We go take them. They, by law, we have to wait 48 hours before a person can be cremated, because that gives the family a time to think, is this really what they want to do? And or if there's some, depending on the reason for the passing, gives legal
people a chance. Let me tell you why I said that. Because in my discussions with people, I've had mm-hmm. certain situations. I've talked to people in these conditions who go, we're burned with this. It's like, we have to do it because we're family. We can't do it. So you providing all these services mm-hmm. from A to Z, one is the basic to whatever you want. It mm-hmm. can go the whole gamut.
Right.
So if people think, oh man, I got to put somebody in the dirt and I got to get the casket. I got to do liners. It's going to cost me money. But if they've got the money, that's fantastic. But if they don't, you also provide the service that
yes, that is why we get really vocal on the pre-needs. Because on a pre-need service, you can come in, you can pick out your casket, you can pick out your type of service, you can pick out a lot of things, and it literally locks in that price. Funerals, on average, go up between $200 and $250 per year. So if in 2018, we're looking at $7,500. Can you imagine what that price would be in 5 years or 10 years?
Hey, look, since we're running out of time, let's finish up that particular segment by this question here. Mm-hmm. If you do a cremation,
yes,
what do you do with the ashes? Some people you hear they put them on their mantle, or they bury
them.
We've
had them buried at sea. We've had them sprinkled over a mountain. We've had them blown to their favorite. In the water to their favorite fishing
hole. Can they buy a burial lot as well?
You can. You can. Okay. Absolutely.
Very diversified here, okay?
Yes, very.
Now, Vicki, I'll tell you what. Since we're running out of time,
okay.
I think this is an important thing. If somebody walks up on a relative or somebody mm-hmm. and they're dead,
yes.
It's 3:00 in the morning, mm-hmm. What do you do?
They have to call 911. We cannot go and pick up someone unless a hospice nurse or a policeman or an EMT mm-hmm. or someone officially notifies us. And once we have official notice and they've pronounced that person, then we're allowed to pick up.
Okay. Sounds very interesting. I'll tell you what, we're out of time.
Okay. Vicki,
tell everybody how they can get a hold of you.
We have, check our website. It's www.mblfuneral@att.net. Our phone number is 254-697-3661. And give us a call.
I'll tell you what, we didn't even touch half the sheet. I'll tell you what, give me Vicki's commercial there, and we'll do that commercial. We'll get a master key all set up. But Vicki, I can't tell you, it's a pleasure to get you on here. I never realized I had so many questions about death.
That's okay.
I just thought it was simple. You live, you're dead.
We want to take the mystery out of it.
And you're a class act. So, ladies and gentlemen, if that time comes and you need your services provided, Vicki Goza here can square you away. So one more time, your phone number, they can get a hold of you?
254-697-3661.
Great. Trey, let's play that commercial. On the other side, we'll have Master Cindy Key.
Not everyone believes in the same way or has the same customs and cultures as everyone else.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lidwell Funeral Home in Cameron talks about individual needs.
We can make everything very personalized. It's not a package A, a package B, or a package C. It's totally about the family and what their needs are.
Mark Burns Lidwell Funeral Home in Cameron, serving Central Texas families since 1908.
Hi, Master Key here, Master Cindy Key from Central Texas Martial Arts in Rockdale, Texas. And today I'm going to talk about the warrior mentality. A lot of people think that martial arts train, you know, to fight. And a lot of people think that that's all it's about is fighting. But it's really not. If you have a true warrior mentality, that can be anybody in life. You don't have to be a martial artist to have a warrior mentality. We just strive to be excellent in the things that we do, and nobody's perfect and everybody makes mistakes, but we try to take responsibility for our mistakes if we make them and try to do what we can to fix that mistake. We train to fight so we don't have to fight, if that makes any sense at all. You know, somebody on the street, you know, if somebody says something bad to them, they may just take off and throw a punch or push or whatever. But, you know, our mentality is different than that. The only time that we're allowed by our martial art honor, I would say, is if we're physically, or somebody that's with us that, you know, that we care about, our friends, our family, or maybe even a complete stranger, if they're being threatened physically, then that's when we're allowed to pull out what we know. It's much like soldiers that train to go to war, but we really hope they don't ever have to go to war. We try to be prepared for that option if that presents itself to us. But really, it's not at all about fighting. It's training to better ourselves physically, mentally, making ourselves stronger. In those both areas, so we really are studying to be prepared more than just take off in an attack. Anyway, that's all I have for today for you.
Tell them how to get on.
My number is 254-721-2775. I'm trying to see if anybody's interested in an adult class for this fall. If you are, give me a call and we'll make a list. And that's it for today. Great. Have a great 4th of July.
Awesome. And everybody, until next week, keep your powder dry and God bless.
Administration's zero tolerance immigration policy.
Stay horrified. Stay angry. Do not recede into silence or indifference, as tempting as it may be.
She is in Washington, D.C.
When you smile, I am undone.
Where Lin-Manuel Miranda is singing from the musical Hamilton. CBS News correspondent Kenneth Craig is in the middle of a huge crowd in New York City.
Thousands of people started showing up, all with this...